originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios here in the heart of the Bluegrass. And yeah, you know, I open the show every week talking about this being the show that trainers listen to, and it really is. We have had so many trainers over the years who have come to me and to Jude when he was doing this program with me, and they would say, you know what, we loved that interview with so-and-so. We loved hearing the story of our colleagues. And I've had many owners come to me over the years and say, we enjoy listening, and we've even chosen our trainers because of what we hear on the program. And I can't thank each of you enough for taking the time to tune into this program every single week. And I want to make sure that I extend a very special welcome to all of you across HRN Nation here today, including everyone listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and all of you tuned in to our free live streaming or archived podcast. You're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you along for the next hour as I take another unique look at an individual in our sport making it successful and a great story. Tonight's guest is a native of Turkey. I'm not sure I've ever had a Turkish native on Trainer Talk in all the years that we've been doing this, but he's a native of Turkey, which means he grew up about 5,300 miles away from where he now currently resides in New York. He came to the U.S. in 2016. He has saddled 114 winners already in his very young career. And in April, he won NYRA's Under-20s Claiming Challenge at Aqueduct. That's a pretty cool honor for our guest here tonight, who is Mertkan Kantarmachi. And welcome to Trainer Talk, Mertkan Kantarmachi here on HRN. Mertkan, welcome.
Thank you. How are you guys?
Everything is good, my friend, and really excited to hear your story. I don't know. I was trying to go back as I was getting ready for the program and look through some of the shows. I can't recall ever having a trainer who was born in Turkey on this program in the 8 years I've been doing it. So congrats on that honor, I guess.
Thank you. It's nice to be first, you know, from my country.
Yeah. Okay, so how does somebody, like, I know Turkey has really put an emphasis on horse racing, especially over the past several years, but it's continued to grow in your country. Take me back to the beginning and getting started, being around horses. How did it all come together for Mertkan?
Yeah, my story, like, we are a really horseman family. It's coming, like, from my grandfather's father, actually grandfather's grandfather, which is he used to make the horse beat. He was making the horse beat for the Ottoman Empire horses back in more than 100 years ago.
Wow.
So, and when they were given the last names, when they start giving the last names, which is my last name is Kantarmacı. It meaning is the horse beat maker. The horse beat maker. So it's coming from there to my family. And then his son, and then his son, and then my father. And then it's me right now. My father has been training more than 35 years. I think he got his trainer's license in 1978. And last 20 years, he's one of the top five or top three, I can tell you guys, trainers. And then we opened our eyes seeing the horses in the world, you know? Like, it's coming from the family.
You know, it's interesting because we talk about horse racing here in the United States, and having a rich heritage and going back generations, and we do that all the time. But you're talking about the Ottoman Empire and your name dating back to those days. Now, that's some serious history, Merkan.
Yes, yes. That's really true because, like, really, really, what can I say? Like, really seldom people do these things. Like, we hear the horseshoe makers, and then I know their last name also, horseshoe maker, in my language. But I only the family has that last name is my family. Nobody else you can see my last name. That's the, like, it's very special for my family and to have it and to do this business still in my generation. I'm very proud of doing this business and following my grandfather and my father. I'm very happy to do that.
How much has racing in Turkey evolved since your grandfather's days?
I think they started 1920s. Officially making the races.
Mm-hmm.
And 1953, if I'm not wrong, they established the Jockey Club of Turkey. And since then, they have been doing, and we have Turkish Derby, which is the only sport in my country they have been doing nonstop every year, the last Sunday of June.
How many racetracks are there in Turkey?
There is like more than 10 right now. The most popular one is, and the best races are on the in Istanbul. On the poly track, we have all-weather track and the turf. Really good, nice turf course we have.
How do you compare? Is there a racetrack here in the States that you could compare the major racetrack in Istanbul? Is there any comparisons to be made with anything that we see here in the States?
For the as a racetrack or races, which one you guys want to know?
Yeah, the racetrack.
Or the racetrack?
The racetrack.
Racetrack is, I think, like in here, in the United States, people more fun of the racing, I believe. Like, they love the horses more than anyone can do in the other countries, I believe, because they love racing. They love dressing up, going to the races. In my country, a little bit, like, less than that, only the biggest day, I can say. Like, only the biggest days of the racing, biggest weekends, they get like that. But when I see in Saratoga and Kinland, it's unbelievable here. They don't miss any day in the racing.
Is there a racetrack here in the States that you would compare the big racetrack in Istanbul to? Is it more like a Belmont or like a Keeneland, or is it not like any of them?
I can say maybe Belmont, because Belmont sometimes like quiet as a racetrack, and Istanbul is also quiet as a racetrack in the regular racing days. So, and when it gets big, it's really big. You can't even find a space in the racetrack. That's how it is. So I think Belmont close to the Istanbul's racing.
So in the 1920s, when racing was really starting to come into prominence in Turkey, as I was getting ready for the program, I read an article by Andy Beyer that was written years ago in the Washington Post, and he talked about the first president of the Turkish Republic and how when he came into power, he said that horse racing is a social need for modern societies. And I thought that was an interesting statement. Is that the way that Turkish people view horse racing, as a need for the society?
Yes. That's it's really good saying from our first president, which is I follow his lifestyle also, you know, and I respect how he see the future about the racing and horses. He loved, that's what we read and what we watch the videos. He loved going to the races, and he believed in that racing gonna make the people's view on the sports, I think. They are gonna change their being a modern about their lifestyle, I think, because it's really, there is no another sport, the two alive, like human and horse, is they both alive. There is no another sport you can do two alive, with the two alive, one animal and one human. So that's why I think that's what he see and that's what he mentioned about.
If I go to the races in Turkey, Mertkan, what's my experience going to be like? Am I going to go to the windows and make a bet just like I do here in the States? How does it work?
I think you will do, because they like it. They do that. And you're going to enjoy the racing, especially the turf races, because turf course is much closer to the grandstand. And we are doing the turns the other way, not to the left. They do the other way. They make the last turn to the right. So we have the two turns like how the Belmont has, but the other way they are running, not to the left turn. So you're going to love the turf races, and you're going to be surprised with the Arabian horses racing in my country, because we have thoroughbreds. Still they are trying to improve and get in the stallions. Even this year they made a big buying of the stallions.
Yeah.
Even the private owner and the jockey club bought nice sires from America. And you're going to see the Arabian horses also, Arabian raising, very high quality, very good quality, purebred Arabians. Not like in Germany, France, Poland, they are different. But in my country, they have been following that maybe almost 200 years, their bloodline.
I'm glad you brought up the stallions, because the first thing I thought of as I started thinking about Turkey and how it plays into the racing picture was the breeding industry. And I know that there have been Derby winners that have been sold to Turkey, like Sea Hero and Strike the Gold. Those two horses come to mind. Victory Gallop is another one. I guess Lionheart was there too.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what's the breeding industry like in Turkey?
Breeding industry, that's the thing, very different than this country. We don't have really big sales operations. Like Finland, Fezzik Timpton, and like whatever you guys have here, we don't have like that over there. They just started doing their own, like little part of sales. The reason is everyone has that their mares. They are going to any stallion they want to, either from the jockey club or the private stallions. The thing is, when you start doing breeding as an owner, as a breeder, you stay with this horse, because we don't have the claiming races over there, how we have in America. That's the biggest different part. And they give really good money when you finish first, second, third, fourth, hit the board. They give really good awards to the breeders. So they want to keep their own horses, and then they are getting the owners and the breeders all kind of the money they make, because the horse is yours until they finish their racing career. So like they have maybe 10 or 20 claiming races in a year in my country. So, which is makes the competition less, more individual, more, so many years you have to go with the horse you breed, you own. But of course, they do, private sales, they do, like, I'm a breeder and I wanna sell my horse and I just wanna stay in breeder and get the breeder awards only. Some farms do that, some owners do that. But most of the times, you you are with your horse until they finish their career. And if you have a good bloodline, and if you believe it's filly, it's a mare, you can keep doing the next generation for that one. If you have a good horse that won good races, you can make a stallion too.
Yeah, it's interesting. Talking with Mertkan Kantarmaci, the trainer who was born in Istanbul, Turkey. He is now here in the United States running races or saddling horses at Aqueduct. We're going to talk more about his career here in the United States since coming here in 2016, but talking now about his upbringing and about racing and breeding in Turkey. You know, the other thing, Mertkan, that I came across in the article that Andy Beyer wrote for the Washington Post years ago was that he mentioned that owning racehorses was a winning investment in Turkey. And here in the United States, we often say, okay, it's difficult to make money on the ownership side of things. You have to be really lucky and you have to be really smart with the way you run your operation. Is it still the case? That article was from about 2012, I think. Is it still the case where if you own horses in Turkey, you can do okay on the ownership side?
You can do okay because, like, I think, like, when you win a race in every 6 months, it covers your most of the parts expenses. So if you have a horse makes every 2-3 months wins, and if it's pretty, like, good races, allowance and maybe stakes in a year, it's going to be, like, good income for the owner, of course.
Yeah, so there is an opportunity to make money on that side of things. How about on the betting side? Is the takeout still as high as it was years ago?
Yes. It's always, they have a big numbers on the betting in my country. And in my country, the racing is, the Jockey Club is not someone's, or any racetrack is not a person's racetrack. So all the racetrack is the jockey clubs, and it's not belong to the government. It's their own facility, their own everything, their own. Which is, they are supporting the races from the betting, plus they are supporting the government with this money. So it's very strong gambling over there, very strong horse betting. People love the horses over there too. But the thing is, the popularity in the racetracks are little smaller than what I see here. That's what I mean in the beginning when I talk about Finland and Saratoga.
Yep.
That's the difference I see about the racetracks also.
Here in the United States, we have legendary horses like Secretariat and Man O' War, and those names are the first ones that usually come to mind when people think about horse racing here. How about in Turkey? Who are some of the greatest Turkish champions of all time?
The greatest horse? The horse break the record in the Turkish Derby. Horse name is Bolt Pilot, and they made a movie about him last year. So he's our legend. So many people, even they don't know anything about racing or betting, they know this horse and they know his rider, which is the best rider in the Turkey, Halis Karataş. And he also rode the races in Dubai and Europe, everywhere. In America also he rode. So this horse is the legend thoroughbred horse in my country, which he broke the Turkish Derby record on mile and half grass, on the grass. Turkish Derby is only 3 years old horses, which they can participate in their life once, like Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, Bold Pilot, pretty special horse in Turkey. Would he, obviously this is going back years, but do we ever see Bold Pilot compete in races outside of Turkey, Mertkan?
No, he didn't go, I believe, because he was running. He was 3 years old in 1996, I think.
Yep.
He broke the record, and since then, nobody could break his record. And also, Arabian horses Arabian, as Arabian horses. My dad used to have the one champion Arabian horse, which called Özgün Han, and he was the one of the most highest money in the earnings Arabian horse. Maybe he's still on the top 10 when the money was lower than today's money, and he was running like 15 years ago. And he won the Arabian Derby in my country, I think, couple times. That is, they don't have the only 3 years old. They can go from three to whenever they can go. So he won a lot of trophies to us too. He's the one of the horse we won a lot of trophies with my dad. That's horses. But he's my one of my legend before any horse I can talk about has been in our life.
Tell me a little bit more about your dad, Tunjai. What made him such a good trainer?
I think his discipline, his respect to his job, and he's every day at the racetrack. He's every day with horses. He's with his own horses since he's 6-7 years old. Since he's 6-7 years old, he used to take care of his own horses, start 10, 15 years old, he started taking care of his own horses. And I think he's very responsibility person, my dad, and very strict about he needs to get done anything horse needs and on time. I think that's bring him success. And of course, he has a good eyes that he can tell about the horses and the issues horses get in their legs. At the end, they are athletics. So they have issues on the legs, on the body, everything in the training. And my dad is very successful in the training. That's what I see with him. Because he go the schedules, not like standard schedules. He do individual schedules for the horses, training schedule, training program, and feeding program. And in the barn, he watched them like almost 10 hours a day in the morning and every afternoon. Also, my dad goes and sees his horses. That's how he become very successful trainer in my country. And there is a thing with my father. Anytime he start with new stable, with the new owners, I can tell you, he make them start running and winning races, and then once he quit with the people, they you can't even know their name anymore in my country. So whenever he gives hand to the any stable, they all made money, they all made success and won races they have never won in their life, these owners. But once he says, I'm done, I'm not going to work with you guys. We never heard from them. They never had any six races won in their life after that.
Yeah,
that's what I see.
Your dad is here with you now, correct?
Yes, he is with me.
Your dad and your brother, too, is involved.
Yes, my brother, too, yes.
Older brother or younger brother?
He's older, 3 years older than me, and he's right now. He's a trainer, too. He has a trainer's license, too, also. But in the one family, we don't want to go two or three different ways. So we decided to go on one name, and which is me. And we are not going to do two different operations or two different locations at the moment. So everybody together, and the horse is running under my name. But they are big help to me. My brother is my assistant right now. He's helping me. And my dad, of course, every day with me. That's how we're running the barn right now.
All right. So there's a saying, Mert Can, that says, don't work with family. And trust me, I worked with my dad for many, many years. And there are times when, because he and I were so similar, we would butt heads. So now there's three of you. You have your brother and your dad and you.
Yes.
How does that dynamic work? Are there some times where you say, hey, wait a minute, guys, we got to do it this way. And they say, no, I want to do it a different way.
Believe me, that happens every day.
So who gets the final say, Dad?
Yeah, we are like unbelievable. I also ride horses in the mornings. I ride horses, and I see something, I tell my dad. My dad says, no, it's okay. Don't worry about it. I say, next day, I say again, this is, I don't like. He says, okay. And at the end, like, we need to work on something, and my dad says different thing. And then my brother says, I don't like this. So we have, but I think that helps us to find the best way for the solution with the problems.
So you're getting on the horses in the morning. Does your brother get on the horses too?
Yeah, he gets on the pony sometimes. He's a little heavier than me. He don't want to gallop too much.
Yeah. How big of an advantage is that for you to be able to get on the horses and know what each horse feels like underneath you?
I think this is the best way to know your horse, because you are alone with your horse in this moment only. Because once I start jogging them and galloping them, I just pay attention to them. I cannot think about anything else. I forget my outside life, my personal life. I give 100% full attention to the horse and what they like, what they show me, because they don't talk. You guys need to, we have to understand, we horsemen need to understand their language in the stall, in their house, and in their training life, which is in the truck. So it's extra help for me to get 100% with my horse when I'm on my horse in the morning. And I breathe them also when I need to, so I see everything. I can feel their breathing, their stretching their legs, their movements, they're comfortable or not, everything, their muscle.
Yeah, you were doing that when you were working with your dad in Turkey, too. You were getting on horses in the morning as his exercise rider. Didn't you ride a few races in the afternoon, too?
I rode, like, kind of amateur races in my country, and I won a race in Istanbul also. This is, like, 13, 14 years ago in 2006. I was 15 years old. I was one of the youngest person that I rode a race in my generation, in my age. So
wow.
I was 15 years old. I rode a race, and I didn't go to the riding school. This is the different thing than other people. Nobody teach me how to ride. Nobody teach me. I got on the horses in the morning, afternoons, walks, and then jogging. And then one of the days, my dad told me in 2005, first time I galloped a horse. I was 14 years old, and my dad told me, this is the horse you're going to start galloping and learning. And since then, I'm on the horses. I never stopped being on the horses. And then they put the amateur races. I never wanted to be professional because I have to go to school 2 years, jockey school in my country. And I was little tall than what they were asking for. So I was always trying to get on my horses in the morning. And also in 2006, after I rode amateur races in Turkey, I rode professional races in Moscow, Russia, Moscow, because my dad won a President Cup in Moscow, in Russia, 2006 with his horse. They finished that heat with a Russian horse. My dad's horse, and Putin, the president Putin, give the cup to our horse to that we won the race. He was there also that day. So after that, we had friends over there, and I went there. I stayed in Moscow 1 month. I rode like 7 races. I won a race over there too when I was 15 years old.
Wow, fascinating story. Mert Can Cantarmaci here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Mert Can, stay with me. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back and continue to hear more of your story in the second half of the program. This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Phasic Tipton Gulfstream sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
She's gifted his turn back kitty ride. As they hit the top of the stretch, She's gifted leads it by two. Appealing Magic now trying to make her run. She's on the outsider driving second. At Street Home, Alabama's in the middle of the racetrack. She's looking to close late from third, but She's Gifted stretches that lead with a 16th to go. She's now clear by 3.5, almost 4. Big effort today by She's Gifted. They come to the finish, and She's Gifted is a clear-cut winner. Going to be close for second. Look like Appealing Magic gets the nod for the place over Celebrate Me Home. It's also close for fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on HRRN. That's Keith Jones with the call of Gifted. She's Gifted, winning a claiming race in 2016 at Parks. She's Gifted, one of the first horses to be claimed by our special guest on Trainer Talk tonight, Mertkan Kantarmaci, after he came to the United States from Istanbul, Turkey, with his father and his brother. They worked together, as you heard in the first half of the program, and off to a very fast start in just the couple of years that they have been here. We'll hear more from Mertkan in just a minute, right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, it's pretty simple. You can listen to us via podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net, so no reason to fret. You can just head over there at your leisure and click play and listen to this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows, and all of our talk shows for that matter, horseracingradio.net and on Apple Podcasts at Horse Racing Radio Network on there. So several ways to tune in and to listen if you missed any portion here tonight. But back with Mertkan here in the second half of the program. And Mertkan, that call, I figured I'd take you on a little trip down memory lane to start the second half of the show. She's Gifted, one of the first horses you became involved with and claimed here, yes, in the United States. And you did pretty well with her.
Yeah, we won two in a row with her. And we claim her very cheap, like 7,500, and then we put her 15,000, 16,000, something like that. Like we always try to like get cheap horses and then improve them. Like they have little issues. Once you find out these things, and when they are in a good take care, in the good hands, in the training and also in the barn, there's a two different. Big difference between the barn and the training. I think when you get them together, it's puzzle together, you know, and it's working out good. And She's Gifted was the first horse. She answered anything we needed from her really in the good way. So I think she was the right pick to be first claim and then to be first winner for my family.
In the first half of the show, we talked about working with family, and there are three of you with your dad and your brother. How does it work when you're looking at claiming a horse? Does it come up to a vote so that there can't be a tie vote? You'd have a 2-to-1 majority. Or does one of you just say, hey, I like this horse, we're going to get it?
This is how it works. My brother looks in the past performances when the overnights are out. And he started looking from 3 days, 2 days, and day before, and even the race morning. If we are focused on one horse, we are always trying to watch their races if we can. If not, any time, me and my brother, or my dad and my brother, we are going to see the horses. We never drop the claim slip before we see the horses, or we never left a claim slip to get a claim with somebody else, you know. So my brother is good on the paperwork. I'm good also on the paperwork to see the performances. And then we always respect my dad's eyes, whatever he sees, whatever he tells us. But besides that, me and my brother, we go. My dad leave it to us a little bit in last couple of years, because he says, you guys are following everything good and you guys handle together. That's how it works right now.
Are there certain traits or certain things that you look for in a horse before you claim them, where you say, hey, I'm not going to touch this horse unless it does this, this, and this? Or is every horse different?
Unless they look very skinny, I don't like that. Or if they don't look healthy and shiny, even in the summertime, even in the nice season, nice weather, I don't want to go too much kind of horses. Or, of course, the most important thing, the way they walk. I keep my eyes on their leg, their front leg, back legs, how they step before the paddock, at the paddock, and then we decide.
When you came here in 2016, you started at Parks. Why was Parks the right place?
Parks was the right place because they have really good purse, if you compare to the other racers in the country. And racing is good, I believe, because too many options over there, not as much as New York, but too many options. You can go from 5,000 to 50,000 claiming. So, and they are using the races, the condition races, never 1, 2, 3, 4, even 4, which we don't have in New York right now. And they have good options in the condition book, not win in last 6 months or not win 2 in last 6 months. These are good conditions, I believe.
Did you make that decision before you left Turkey that you were going to go to Parks to get started?
We were looking what is the best way. We wanted to start in New York, actually. But New York is a little tough when you are new to make yourself accept to the people. Parks was little bit easier for us to start with, to make the beginning with.
I can't believe I haven't asked you this so far in the interview, but what made you want to come to the United States in 2016?
Yeah, this is the thing. My brother was the first person came to the United States, and we have a family members in New York, but they are not in the horse business.
Okay.
So my brother win the lottery for green card. That's how he came to here. And then my dad and I, we came here with the investor investor visa. So we got the green cards from there too also. And my brother and my dad also won all of the kind of the races over there, except the only Turkish Derby he didn't won over there in the Thoroughbreds, not the Arabians. He won the Arabians multiple times. And my dad always wanted us in the, you guys need to go, you guys need to learn more about different things, about the horses and about racing. He didn't want us to be stuck in the Turkey, I believe. He made us go nationwide.
So where do you see this going, Merkkan? Do you see yourself expanding to the point where you're getting horses that compete in races like hopefully the Kentucky Derby and major races like that? Or do you want to keep your niche in the claiming ranks?
I don't want to stay all the time in the claiming game. I will always stay in the claiming game, but I don't want to just limit myself with that, because I don't see future of the Kentucky Derby from the claiming. There is no future like that, or Breeders' Cup. That's why we need to start, like, going to the sales when we are ready. Not maybe, not in a couple more years from here. But at the end, of course, my goal is Kentucky Derby if I can go with my own baby.
Yeah, wouldn't that be special? And, of course, you and your brother own so many of the horses that you're involved with, so it's a family operation for sure. Do you train for any other outside clients, or is it just the three of you?
We have a partnership with the America's Pastime Stables. They wanted to create a good stable partnership between them, and then they wanted to be a partner with my dad also. With my family raising stable, so we are doing good job with them since we started. I think we claimed first horse April, analyzed the odds, and he won for them, and then we won with a couple more horses, played at Funny Music, Moditly, Handled with Care, and these people are happy because we are really doing good with them right now. We made money, we won races. And the second person I have, Robert Amendola, Bob Amendola.
Yeah.
He's a long-time owner also. And we started with him in January, I think we claimed our first horse. And then we made a good claims with him, and we are doing good. And my last race I won with him, Felix in Fabula. We won 11th race. So far, these two different people, other than my dad's horses, I'm working with right now.
I'm going to give you the chance to brag on yourself a little bit here, Mertkan. Tell me about the day that you won and saddled your first winner here in the United States.
What is it?
Tell me about the day that you saddled your first winner here in the States.
She's gifted.
Was it She's Gifted? She was the very first one?
Yeah, she was like a gift to me in the first one.
What do you remember about that day when she crossed that finish line first?
I was so happy. She won with Cece Lopez at Parks. And I was very glad because I get her ready, everything in my dad and my brother. And she showed us, actually, we are going to make this thing here. Because, you know, we are coming from another country. It's not easy to have success. And this finish line is really success for what you worked on long time, actually.
Have you become close with any other American trainers since you've been here that have... You've kind of leaned on them a little bit and learned from them, and you watch them and you say, geez, they do a really good job?
I honestly didn't have anything like that I didn't have any opportunity to learn from anybody because in the, like, a lot of competition here, I can't really go and be close to anybody. We are claiming horses and we are in our own way, and I don't want anybody to think wrong that I'm trying to steal from them. So, and I believe my way is a good way for the horses that I have. But of course, there is no limit in this horse business. Everybody can learn every day from somebody else. And I would love to see somebody really experienced or somebody like me, horseman generation people. I would love to learn how they do more things.
Yeah,
I didn't have too much opportunity like that.
It's a great point. If you know, you've been here for a few years now, you've made a name for yourself with the claiming horses. If you could sit down and go to dinner with one trainer in New York or anywhere in the United States, who would that trainer be?
This is a tough question. I don't know. Maybe I would say Todd Fletcher, because he has a big organization and really really good operation he's running.
Yeah, he's one of the best and would certainly be an interesting conversation at dinner, no doubt. Mert Cantormacci, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here tonight. Mert Can, in April, you won NYRA's under-20s claiming challenge at Aqueduct, and we were talking during the commercial break. I didn't even realize this. You won that event twice, once at Aqueduct and once at Belmont. Tell me about those two events.
We doubled it. We doubled it for NYRA. And I was scared. I was scared they are never going to do it again because they are giving all the praise to me, you know. So we made good money too, and they called me from the couple places to make the interview with me, and they told me this is almost equal to winning a stakes race, like grade one race. I said yes, it's like that to me as a trainer, you know. So they made a challenge, and I think it's a very good thing because it makes the people like to be in the more game, because for the trainers, small operation trainers, less than 20 horses, it made us really in good, really good competition. And as a young person to win that, to me, is really good. Aqueduct and Belmont, these racetracks are like dream to make something like that. It's a title for me.
Yeah, it's amazing to think about growing up in Istanbul and then coming here and now winning an event like this that's put together on a circuit like the New York Racing Association. It's a remarkable story, Mert Can. And you touched on the fact that claiming challenge, for people that didn't catch that and don't know what we're talking about, it is open to trainers with 20 or fewer horses. So for the small operations, this is a chance to get some notoriety and to make some significant money, as you mentioned, and kudos to winning it twice. That's impressive.
Yes, and I don't see too many people coming from the Parks racetrack from Philadelphia to New York. And I think we are the one of the very, very few people that make this move to the big arena. This is a really, really tough place to make the races and to finish to win the race. So we, in 2.5 years, we totally finished everything in Parks, and we moved to New York with my brother and my dad. And in a short time, we started with 10 horses in the first challenge in Aqueduct this last winter. And then we won it. And then in Belmont, I was 15 horses, and I won it again. And I won with the big difference. I was almost 100 points. And the closest person, 60 points. So we made a really big distance with the people that has been training in New York maybe more than 10 years.
You better be careful. You keep winning all these races and having all this success, you're not going to be eligible for that claiming challenge anymore.
I made it this year because I had some turf horses. I sent them before the day is over to participate the thing. But we put the application with 15 horses. I'm in this year too, so I don't know who is going to be in. I didn't see the list yet.
If you were going to describe your philosophy and your approach to training horses, how would you do it?
If I describe my philosophy, they are my words, so... Only the thing I can say, I can't see a life without a horse, but racehorse. We have been in the racing since we know ourselves, so raising a horse is my life.
Tell me about the horse that sticks out most to you, the horse that you've been around that maybe you've done some great work with, or just a horse that captured your heart that you're never going to forget.
I used to have horses in my country that I will never forget. But here we have one horse, Sierra Sun. He's with us last 5 years. My brother's first horse, actually, it's him. he claimed him very cheap, and he won for us like 10 races and 6 different racetracks. He's our pony. We decided to retire him. He's the horse in our heart, and we made a birthday party for him this year, and everybody was talking about him this year. And he's the like funny one. He's the one spoiled one, and I'm getting on him and trying to teach him to be a pony because he still thinks he's a racehorse. He's going crazy, and my brother also feeds him good because he doesn't want him to stay hungry. He's the one we will never forget because he helped us a lot. Anytime we needed to see our success, he put us in the stairs. That's what I will never forget with Sierra Sun.
What was the birthday party like?
It was like full of carrots, apples, and mints for him. And the people working for us, we were all together because we made an arrangement. We told everybody got to be here for him. And we made the signs for him and the balloons. We don't have kids. My brother and I, we don't have kids. He's like our kid in the family.
You said you have family that is here in the United States that are not interested in horse racing, or they're not involved in the business. Do they take an interest? Do they like it? Do they follow you guys when you have horses running?
Yeah, they follow us, but they actually want to get involved. They want to have horses. My uncle is here, my dad's cousin. I call him my uncle. That he wanted to get horses with us, but my dad a little bit makes him stay away from the racing because they don't know. They don't know the up and downs in the horse business, and I think that's why. But they know we share our winning pictures and stuff, and they make news in my country. We have a really nice people. They really support us really good. They make news in my country all the time. We win. We have success. That's the way people follow my family, follow us right now.
You know, Merck, can we have listeners on the Horse Racing Radio Network in more than 140 countries. I think it's about 147 countries so far in 2019. What advice do you give to a young trainer that's listening in some other part of the world that is thinking about making that move to the United States and trying to start a life here and start training horses here?
I will tell them that's a good dream. That's a nice place to be, this country. I'm glad I'm here so far. Everything going good. The thing is, they will never stop dreaming and trying to look for it, trying to search what they can do. If you stop looking for it and asking for it, it's never going to happen. And I was always open to learn and to know, to look for the next door. If the one door is closed, I go to the next door. So if people, the young trainers want to be here, hopefully they can make the stay in the country. This is the first thing. But besides that, they will pay attention to their horses. That's all.
Who's your idol, Merck Can?
I think I'm following my dad because he's the legend in my country already, and I didn't meet anybody to make an idol for me in this country yet.
Yeah, Merck Can.
And I believe our training working out because we are doing. Thank God we are doing good.
Yeah, things are rolling right now for you and for your dad and for your brother. Merck Can Cantormacci, yeah. My special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. If you are just tuning in and you missed most of the program, all you have to do is head over to our website. You can hear his entire story This 1 hour program will be available via podcast at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Another way to tune into our programming each and every week. And you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. Mert Kan, you are also set up on social media. You have a Twitter page. How important is that, or is it important, when you're trying to attract new clients maybe, or to get your name out there? Is it a tool that you use?
Yeah, actually, this America's Pastime Stables, the manager, the partnerships, in their own partnerships manager, they reach me from Twitter. So it's important to have a website. But I don't have a website, so it's good they reach out me from my official account, social media. I keep it. I try to post my success over there, and I try to let the people know if I have any news with any horse. I don't know what else we should do, you know, but this, you guys are doing great job. I didn't know about this, and I'm really happy to be guest for you guys in the radio show. I'm very happy that I can make my voice to more than 100 different countries that they can listen me. And if they want to go and click on the thing to listen the show, it's very. I'm very happy to be your guest also.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to hear your story. We've got about 2 minutes left in the program, and I always like to wrap it up by asking trainers to tell us something about themselves that we haven't talked about yet, something that people might not know. So outside of horse racing, do you have any other hobbies or interests or sports that you follow?
My hobby is I play clarinet. I follow to listen to all kind of music and stuff. But I like to play clarinet when I'm at home or when I'm with my family friends. And I'm pretty good with it. They like it.
Wow. I had no idea. That's really special. Is that something you'll do to kind of take your mind off racing a little bit?
That's why I do that, yeah. I rest my head. I rest my head at the end of the day. But it's bad for the neighbors. The neighbors don't like me when I play.
He is ultra-talented, and he is really, well, put it this way, the arrow is pointing up for Mert Kan Kantormaji, my special guest here on Trainer Talk. Mert Kan, really appreciate the visit, and all the best moving forward, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, guys. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, fun hour. And again, you can head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows. Clarinet, who knew? I guess that's why he asked the question. Really talented guy, and his family doing a great job here in the United States since coming here in 2016. That's about going to do it for me here tonight on Trainer Talk. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton.